Welcome to the Auto Detailing Podcast, where we bring you the latest information in the car care industry with special interviews from the leading professionals in the industry. Now, here's your host, Jimbo Balaam.
Welcome to episode 43 of the Auto Detailing Podcast. I'm Jimbo, your host. And before we begin the show today, I want to give a shout out to the following people: 44 Annex, Matt Dubb, Kinwald, and Heather B. You guys rock. Thanks so much for listening to the podcast and taking the time to give your feedback. If you listening right now want me to give you a mention at the top of a future show, just head on over to autodetailingpodcast.com, click that subscribe in iTunes button, leave us a review in iTunes, and I will give you a shout out at the beginning of a future episode. Today we have Matt Gibb back on the show. If you haven't heard his past episode or his previous episode, you can head over to autodetailingpodcast.com/Matt Gibb. And that was just a dynamite episode. We talked all about DA and rotary polishing. So head over for that. And if you want the full intro of what Matt's all about, what he's got going on, he's down in Australia, runs a company called Detailology. But if you want the full intro, head on over to autodetailingpodcast.com/Matt Gibb. Hey, Matt, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Great to be back.
All right. And today we're going to be talking about a subject that I know you are super passionate about, Matt, and that's backing plates, pad maintenance, different pads. And if we have time, we're going to get into polishing tool brands and all that good stuff. So let's really start at the beginning. And Matt, just to give you kind of a heads up, or I guess a warning, I'm going to assume the role of a listener today. So I may ask some questions that seem really base level, but I really want to try and connect with our listeners who may not know the difference in pads, may not know the difference in backing plates, may not know all this stuff. So if I ask some really beginner questions, just bear with me. I'm just trying to kind of reach the mass majority of our listeners. Does that sound good?
That sounds fine. No problem at all. That's great.
Cool. So let's begin with backing plates. And just go ahead. Just take it away.
Okay. Well, backing plates have a major role in performance of polishing. They basically can be look like, well, you just put these on a machine, you put a pad on it, and off you go, and you get a great result. But there's a lot more to it than that. There's a very wide variety of backing plates, and they have a lot of variables with them. And basically, you can get backing plates come in female and male, which means, you know, one's for DA polishing, and there's ones for rotary polishing. And they vary in their hardness and their thickness. And if you, for example, are working on a curvy surface, curvy panel, and you're using a flat rigid pad like I've got sitting next to me here, has no foam backing or no urethane foam of urethane backing.
So it's super thin, in other words?
Super thin, rigid. If you use that with like a typical foam cutting pad, there's no real problem. But if you go and use, for example, say a Meguiar's extra cut microfiber cutting disc or polishing disc, you can get a situation where there's just not enough basically contouring and backing, and it can tend to be that it just hops around on the machine and can be a problem. So you've got Meguiar's have got ones that are designed for the microfiber discs. They give it the contouring it needs and the support it needs, that the pad needs, to actually be able to polish the surface without the machine hopping around all over the place and causing a problem. Now, backing plates come in a very, like I said, a wide variety of thicknesses, from 0 millimeter thickness to up to 30 to 35 millimeter. And what I do, I'm not sure if it's unique to me or not, but what I do is I will start with, if I'm using a DA or a rotary to correct and finish, I'll start with either a rigid with a microfiber disc or a wool pad, And then if I'm going to say imagine doing a VW Beetle, for example, you know, an old VW Beetle, very, very difficult to some degree vehicle to polish because of the shape of the panels. So you need those thicker 10mm, 15mm, up to 30mm plates. But what I really do is I start with a rigid one or a semi-rigid. So a semi-rigid one would have probably 10mm to 8 to 10mm, up to 16mm of urethane or foam support. And that allows me then to go along and correct that panel. Then when I go to the next step, I go to an even thicker plate with the next pad. For example, if I go microfiber, then say somewhere between a 60 and a 70, 80 mil, 80 pore per inch foam, then I'll go to an even thicker one for my 100, 105, 110 and 120 pore per inch, which at the moment I believe is the world's softest foam. So I change the plate thickness as I go, because you just don't need a rigid plate for doing the final finishing. You just don't need that. And that's my way. You can just use one plate and go all the way through. But it is very good that I like to change the thickness right up to my 30mm plate, because I just find that it works for me very, very well. And there is a big difference also in backing plate build quality. The Chinese ones that I have tested, they just don't compare in their working performance and their build quality as good as these European ones that I have sitting next to me, and some of the American ones. They're just so much better made. They don't fail. The actual hook and loop is actually far better quality. So I spend the money on a really good set of backing plates.
You know, what's interesting to me is when you kind of brought up this subject to me about backing plates is, to be quite honest, I never really thought too much about backing plates. You know, the focus was always on the pad. There's not really too much talk, at least in what I've read about the backing plates. So that's, I think this is a really important topic and a really important subject for detailers. Because I don't think that it's talked about all that often, or maybe I'm just running in the wrong circles. But I want to go back to when you're starting out with the thinnest pad, what you use the VW Beetle as an example. And then you worked your way up to the thicker pads. Is there, obviously, as you get up to the thicker pads, you're getting more of a flex on the pad, kind of, right? But is there any other reason? What is the backing plate doing to the pad the thicker you go? What is that doing to the finish of the car, and why does that matter?
Well, to me anyway, I started doing it because I figured, well, look, you've done your correction step, there's nothing there or only very minor things left depending on what service the customer is vehicle's getting. I go to a thicker one at the end because I just believe that, look, why do you need to use a really stiff, thick plate, thin plate, when you're finishing? You know, you've got these really, really super soft foams, or actually quite dense foams, depending on what type, whether they're closed cell from Europe or you've got open cell reticulated foam. I find that the thicker 30mm plate that I have here in my hand it's got a lot of flexibility. So if you're doing sort of not just a dead flat panel, but a panel with some contouring, it's curving, it works really well. I think it actually really helps the pad just do its thing. I really think that that's what it does. It's just there to do its thing. It helps it a hell of a lot. Whereas a rigid plate, there's just no backing, there's no contouring. It doesn't allow the pad to flex when you're moving from one area of a panel to the next and going around curves and so forth.
Okay.
It gives a really, really good support. And obviously what I also do, which is I find very important, is I use a plate that matches the type of Velcro backing there is. So for example, if it's a 150mm or a 160mm size pad, and it's got a, but it's actually got a 125 millimeter recessed Velcro. I'll use a 125 millimeter, or if it's a 150 or 160 or 180, I'll use a plate that is exactly that size. So it actually provides maximum support to the pad. You don't have any material of pad that isn't supported. Like if you use a 125 millimeter backing plate on a 200 mil pad, the outside edges are just so open, there's nothing supporting it, and it can just flex and it can do things that I don't want it to do. So I just find it gives maximum support, really. It's really maximum support, allows the pad to do its work, gives it some flex, and if you want to sort of turn the machine a little bit, angle it a little bit, tilt it, you know, you've got some flex.
Yeah, I was just thinking about that. If you're using a stiffer backing plate, that might be really good if you need really precise control with the machine, and you need a really solid back, and it's a thinner back too, so you can really pinpoint where you're taking that.
No, and there's a lot to it, and actually I'll give a plug really to Michael Stoops from McGuire's, because he put up an article on their forum, I think it was a year or two ago, maybe 3 years ago, and it was one of the best backing plate articles I'd ever read, basically talking about different types of hook and loop backing, and how you've got micro hook, you've got PSA, you've got different types of Velcro types, really, and you can't use a micro one with something else, and there's all that. But really, yeah, I like going from a thin, hard one to a medium to a semi-thick to a thick. You can start with a thick and you can finish with a rigid. It's all up to the individual person.
So is this only on a, are we only talking on a rotary polisher? Or is,
no.
Okay, this is for a,
this is DA as well. I have a unit that allows me to change backing plates in seconds, any size, any thickness, in seconds, by just putting it into forced mode and giving the backing plate a turn, comes off, put the next one on, put the washers on it, then bang into the next one, and yeah, I can change it really quickly. I mean, the medium ones, like your 10, your 15, 16 millimeter, they're a really good intermediate pad you can use basically from start to finish if you want. Very, 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 very good, sort of like an all-in-one backing plate. I know that the Edge company actually brought out a system where, quite a few years ago, where there was no actual backing plate required. It was just like the Edge 2000, 3000 system. The only thing I had trouble with that is that system works very well. The only problem was that not every other pad manufacturer actually supported it and made pads for it. So, you know, I didn't mind the Edge pads, but I've never really been a fan of American foam. So, I didn't go with that system because you just couldn't buy the pad brand I wanted in that style. So I just had to go back to other brands.
So if someone's in the market for a polisher right now, whether DA or rotary, would you suggest that they look at the machines that you can pop off the backing plates easy, like you were just talking about?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that's a bonus. I mean, the Flex. XC3401, that's one that's quite simple. Most machines are quite simple, you know, you've just got an Allen key,
right,
and unscrew it, change it over. My Festool Rotex that Festool sent to me to test and evaluate, which I think is a nice tool for the time that when that came out, for a lot of years it was a great tool. It's still a good tool, it's just that the orbit throw is a little bit small, a bit short, but it still has its uses. It's got plenty of power. That's got a, basically push the button, unscrew the plate,
okay,
hold the button, and put the next one on, off you go. Just click, click, and you're on, off.
Yeah.
And that's got their, I've actually got their backing plates for that, and they go from a super thin, hard one to a medium to a really thick one that's probably, 20 to 25 millimeter. And that 25mm with one of my 160mm, 150mm pads from Europe or Japan works great on. Finishing works really well. So you definitely go for a machine that can do that. Most of them you can do it now. It's just a 5/16 threaded mail plate. You just unscrew it, no problem. And I'm not really a fan of machines though that don't allow you to change from say 150mm plate to a 125, and you've got to buy the 125 version, you've got to buy the 75 version, you've got to buy the 150 version. I want to have a machine you can just go bang, bang, bang.
Right. Yeah, as easy as possible, I think.
So, yeah, you think about what the cost of a Festool Rotex is, and it's in the RO90DX, which I was going to buy until I found out the Orbit Throw is only 3mm. That's like $600. In Australia, the 125 is like $700, $800, and the 150 is like $900 and something. It's a lot of money.
Right.
To have like three of them just to have three different pad sizes. So definitely, you know, go with a flex or something you can change it.
So why do you think backing plates aren't really talked about? Or am I wrong in saying that they're not really talked about? I mean, you did mention the article from Michael, you know, over 2 years ago, but is it something that's really overlooked in the industry? And if so, why do you think it's overlooked?
I think it's talked about to some degree, but I think people focus more on just the pads. Like, you know, I've got this pad, it's wonderful, does this, does that. But yeah, the backing plate makes all the difference. Like, you put a Chinese backing plate on my machine, and it just doesn't have the balancing. I think, yeah, it's most people, like, you look at all the forums that are out there, and you get all the enthusiasts asking pretty much the same question over and over and over most of the time. And it's you know, what polish and pad for my combo for my coloured car, you know, a certain colour. They just focus on the pad and the polish more than the plate. The plate is a massive part of it. I think it's overlooked because I think too many people in the industry they just see a plate, go, oh, I can just stick a plate on any plate on my machine, I can just buff it, it'll be golden. Well, yeah, to some degree, but really I believe that if you spend a bit extra money on the really good plates, the really good ones, the performance of your work is going to be much better. I think it is overlooked because people just see a backing plate as well, something you just stick on the machine, you put a pad on it, off you go, and that's as simple as it is. But with everything, within detailing and most things in life, there's a lot more to it than people think.
Yeah, it's not just a way to get the pad onto the machine. It actually does serve a purpose.
For example, if I can find the right page here on my European manufacturer's site, you've got different types with backing plates. You've got different types of Velcro hook and loop backing. You've got micro, like I said before. You've got PSA. You've got mushroom hook. And you've got J-hook. And they're all different, and you do a micro hook, you know, pad or plate with a J-hook, and it may work in one direction, but in the other direction from pad to plate, it doesn't work. They won't bond right, they'll slip, they'll fall off, they won't grip right. Most of mine here are actually micro hook, and the pads are made to suit that micro hook style of plate. So I don't have too many J-hook pads going onto a micro hook plate. So you look into all those types of different Velcros, and there's a bit to it to them as well.
Is it possible that a person could not be achieving the correction, or they could not be achieving the right finish on the car due to the wrong backing plate pad combination?
Definitely possible. I think you can pretty much, you could grab most plates and stick it on the machine, and whichever, whether rotary or DA, and, you know, basically, yeah, you could get away with it. But I think that little bit extra gloss, little bit extra, you know, level of orange peel reduction, if you want to do that, the backing plate will help you dramatically. Like, for example, all of mine, I think that does play a part to it. All of my plates have steel threads there are some that have plastic, and the plastic ones, you put them on especially on the rotary, especially not the DA ones, but all the rotary ones. If you get any plastic threaded ones, you can actually use them a few times, and eventually they just cross thread, and it just re-threads itself, and it won't sit right, and it'll fly off the machine. So yeah, I invest in the best, and I don't care if they cost me 16 euros or 16 pounds, or they cost me 40 pounds, or whatever the price is, I don't care. I want the best, and that's it. Because it just helps me a lot, it really does.
And I think that is one thing that detailers will overlook sometimes too, is that, oh, it's too expensive, it's too much money. But in reality, it's what is it costing you by having inadequate equipment? Is it taking you an extra 30 minutes? Is it taking you an extra hour? Is it taking you an extra couple hours? Are you losing jobs? Are you not getting customers back? Or what is it costing you by not just forking over another, you know, 30 bucks or 40 bucks or whatever it is? You know, what is it costing you?
I know when I went to the US the first time to see my friend over there, and basically just hang out with him, was he was buying these backing plates from a body shop supplier, and they looked like a quality item for his rotary. That's what we were using back then, just DA'd finish, that was it. And he would have the Velcro, hook back Velcro actually would basically just die off and just wouldn't have any more bite after about 10 or 15 cut. It was done. It just started off nice and everything would stick to it, and then all of a sudden after 10, 15 cars, it was stuffed. It was done with. No pad, even a brand new pad, nothing would stick to it, and it would just fall off. As soon as he started the machine, even if he put pressure on it, it would just slide off. The pad would just slide off the plate, and he's buying these $30, what he thought were good plates, and I'm like, you need the ones I've got, because I've had some of these now for at least 6 years, and they're like brand new. Everything I had, my pads, my towels, I've got buffing pads from Lake Country, the Eurotech ones, that are now probably almost 11 years old, and I've done probably 100 cars with them, and they look brand new.
The pad themselves?
The actual pad.
Wow.
How people manage to, I mean, I understand with the Roops, you can have a problem with those machines, you can actually have a problem with them tearing pads apart. I know the Shorebuff pads have a problem with that, but I don't have a problem. I mean, I don't hit my pads with a screwdriver, I don't hit them with a corner of a bench or something to clean them up. I just use compressed air, and I wash them by hand or machine with cold water only, and with very high quality surfactants and other things to actually, for my towels, to moisturize them again, keep them. And I don't have a problem. And everyone else has just like got holes in their pad, in their foam pads, and all that. Like, what are they doing?
And if someone's listening and they want to learn about how Matt cleans his pads, head on over to autodetailingpodcast.com/Matt Gibb and listen to the past episode we had on how Matt cleans his pads. So Matt, if someone's starting out and they're listening to this episode right now and they're kind of confused on, you know, they don't want to have the wrong backing plate to start out. Maybe they're a weekend warrior that just they buff out their own car. Maybe there's someone looking to break into the industry. Maybe they've been in the industry a long time and they've only had one backing plate. Or maybe when the Velcro went on that, they just went down to the local supplier and bought whatever backing plate. What would you say are let's talk about, I'm sure you could list off a bunch of different backing plates, but what is the one essential backing plate you need as a detailer or a weekend warrior? Or maybe two. We'll do one for a DA, one for a rotary, unless there can be interchangeable. And then where can we get those?
Well, obviously a good one to start with would be something like the 8, 10, or 15 millimeter thick intermediate plate, which will work totally fine in all circumstances. You can just use it from start to finish and it won't be a problem. And my actual supplier is FlexiPads in England, and also another guy in Germany, which I might give you the link to.
Yeah, that'd be great.
These guys make They make some of the best backing plates I've ever seen. Meguiar's have some good ones. I know Kevin Brown from Buff Daddy with the Merca plates has got some very nice plates as well. And it's worth spending the money on your plates because your Velcro is going to last longer. You know, you're not going to be using it on so many cars and never just be like, well, all right, it's stuffed, or having, you know, all sorts of bits of things stuck to it to the point where you can't even see the Velcro anymore. Mm-hmm. And it will still stick. For flexipads.com, they've got a massive array of power tool consumables. They're Europe's largest manufacturer, and they have some very, very good stuff. And I use them, and I also use the I'll be getting the Liquid Elements, a few backing plates from those guys too, which is a guy in Germany I know really well who's taught me a few things about all sorts of detailing related things. And he's got some very, very nice plates there. And obviously, so Meguiar's, FlexiPads, LiquidElements, .co.uk. And yeah, that's a good start. Get an intermediate one, play with that one, and something between 8 and 16 millimeter thickness, and use that one, and then go up to try the 8 millimeter ones, and try the 0 millimeter ones in the 30s, and you won't regret it. Spend the money on your backing plates. It's all about the quality. I mean, don't sacrifice quality for a bit of money, because that little bit of money, you know, you're saving, what's it costing you?
Right. And if you're listening right now and you couldn't write down any of those websites, just head on over to autodetailingpodcast.com/Matt Gibb and the number 2. Matt Gibb, number 2. Matt, let's transition into pads from the backing plate. And let's talk about maybe different types of pads. I know in the last episode you kind of blew my mind talking about the denim pads and all these other crazy pads that I never even heard about. So let's talk about those a little bit.
Okay, well, obviously...
Maybe not those specifically, but pads, you know, in general.
Yeah, obviously, there's a lot of materials these days. I'm not sure exactly of the number. There may even be some I don't even know about yet that some people are using. But we basically have got wool, we have denim, we have velvet, we have rayon, we have felt, we have microfiber, we have foam. They're the core. And you can use majority of them to correct and finish. And wool is a prime example of one that I think is slightly one of my favorites that I still use occasionally. But
let's talk about wool a little bit, because I think with the DA microfiber system that's coming out and really gaining in popularity, I think wool is maybe kind of taking a back seat. Do you feel that way? Is there still a place for wool? Is it becoming obsolete? Or do you still like it?
I still love it. I know how to use them. Microfiber will not completely replace wool. It will basically put wool into into the background a little bit for doing, you know, basic entry level to mid range work, where you can just use microfiber pad once or twice, or one microfiber, one foam, or two microfibers, one foam. But wool actually has some really good benefits to it, and it's not as an evil pad as people think it is. I think microfiber will that's become the core, you know, the default pad for me. And as I said in the previous episode, if that doesn't work, if it mars the paint, I'll switch to a foam. But wool, I think, has a little bit more cutting power than what the microfiber pads will ever have. Microfiber is quite close, and it can get very close sometimes, but wool is still very good. And the one thing that wool has over microfiber, especially with rotary polishing, is the heat difference. Microfiber on rotary is very, very dangerous. It creates a lot of heat. No matter what polish you use, at any speed, it can get very, very hot really quickly. You can make the panels steam up real quickly. So that's one of its downfalls. Wool always cuts cooler. But it actually can polish to a very nice finish as well. I never finish with wool, but you certainly can cut it, correct paint with wool, and you can polish paint with wool.
Okay, so how about guys that are using a wool pad on a rotary and getting a lot of swirls?
Yeah.
What are they doing wrong?
The possibility is that they are using a synthetic blend, so a poly wool blend, synthetic blends. And synthetic ones, from my years of testing, I've found that they create more heat and they have a higher chance of actually burning the paint than what natural 100% one-ply or twist or four-ply wool does. And they can put more swirls in it because of just the synthetics usually are quite cheap, and they, whether they're cheap or not, they're just nothing compares to nature, nothing compares to wool, to natural wool. If they're using 100% four-ply twisted wool or a one-ply, no matter what the actual pile height is, it could be that the compound that they're using is one that does gouge and tear at the paint, or rip and tear at the paint as it's to correct it, which I do know that there are some that do. Not as many as there used to be decades ago, but they still do exist and they are a problem. Because no matter how well you find, no matter how well you try and finish down with them, they just keep putting marks in it. But I think also it comes down to, with rotary as well, it comes down to the speed they use. If you're running at 2,000, 3,000 RPM, and you don't, or even 1,500 or 1,200, and you don't slow down your machine speed, and don't keep your arm speed consistent, or you tilt the pad, you're gonna put, there's a chance you're gonna leave marring or swirl marks or holograms behind.
Matt, did you get a chance to check out the interview with Jason Rose?
Not as of yet. No, I can't wait.
We talked in depth about polishing speed and how it's kind almost a U.S. thing to want to just ramp up the speed on a buffer. And really, Jason mentioned in Europe, it's not really, they don't use high speed. They don't even, they work at a really low speed. And I talked about how you had mentioned that in our previous episode, and I couldn't remember what speed you never go above. I thought it was somewhere upwards of 1,000 or 1,500 or something like that, where you said you never go above that.
Yeah, well, in this day and age, with the technology of the polishers that we have now, with the three single polish systems that you can use wool, with our jeweling polish, or even our new glazing polish that actually is the only polish product that will actually work as far as give you that clear coat, adding of clear coat replicating look like a glaze can do without silicone, without oils. It does have abrasives in there, but they're so fine, the pad's actually stronger than what the abrasives in the product are. So I use wool quite often with jeweling polish to get out dry paint texture on plastic, bumpers and whatever, and orange peel, and even to correct isolated deep marks on any panel of a car. And it works so much better because it keeps the pad moist. That's one thing also is, for example, if you're running, like the typical standard back in the day, in the 90s especially, in early 2000s, was wool pad 1500 RPM. If you just run at 1500 RPM on most paints and you stop, you're not going to leave the best finish. But if you slow down, go 1500, 1200, 1000, and I go down to 600 at 200 RPM at a time on my Makita or my Festool, for example, you're finding those marks. You're correcting first, and then you are refining and refining and refining it down. And even if you leave some marring or some hologramming, excuse me, it's so fine that next pad, you zoom out of the top in 30 seconds, it's gone. But if you just run at 1500, 1800 RPM and you stop, you've got a bait of paint residue there, and you are, you're not working the polish enough as well, and you're just not finishing down well enough. If you slow down and slow down, spend that time to slow down, you're going to make it a lot better.
It's a retraining of your mind that faster isn't always better.
Yeah, definitely. So
okay, so the wool is going to be mainly for correcting the paint. Is that safe
yes.
to say in one
yes.
sentence? Okay, so
yeah.
Let's move on to a foam pad. What is in a rotary? You're never going to, just for clarification, you're never going to use a wool pad on a DA, right?
No, I
okay.
do.
Never. You do. You do use a wool on DA?
Yes, all the time. Not a problem. Can be done.
Okay. So, and you do it for correcting too?
Yep, absolutely. Polishing, absolutely. Even semi-finishing. And I want to go back to wool for a second. There's a couple of things I want to mention that are very important about wool, so that people out there can really get the grist with it. The thing about it is wool. We've got pile heights. Okay, that's the first thing. We've got ply. We've got twisted wool. Types of wool that there are. Now, pile height, for example, go back to that. Most pads are wool pads are available, especially in 8-inch size, are available in 1.25-inch to 2.25-inch pile height. Now, the lower the pile height is, say a 1.25 to 1.5-inch pile height of a wool pad, that's got more cutting power, more correcting power, usually, than what a 2 to 2.5 or 2.25 is. So, if you want to correct with a wool pad, I'll use a 1.25 to 1.5. And if I want to then polish it with the next step, if someone's say getting the full, you know, the full treatment, I'm doing between 3 and 7 steps. I'll go from a 1.25 or 1.5-inch pile height wool pad to a 2 to 2.25. And what that does, it's got more of a sweeping action. It's got more of a polishing action. It's got a higher pile height. So that has an effect on your cutting and your finishing as well. Now, ply, for example, a 1-ply untwisted wool is more powerful in its cutting power than what a 4-ply is. And a 4-ply is the standard of a wool pad. Most of them are 100% natural wool and they're 4-ply. So they're a good cutting pad, but they can polish quite nicely too. Now obviously there's different types of wool out there. You've got Irish Merino wool, which is what I use as well. There's the new Turkish wool. You've got foamed wool, and you've got Australian wool and New Zealand wool. I use New Zealand wool, which has been super fine grade. It's been micron tested, and that wool, that's my polishing and semi-finishing wool pad. And I can correct lightly with it, but I can polish down really nicely with that before I go back to a foam. So you've got that, you've got, you know, where they're manufactured, are they twisted, you know, how good's the Velcro, all those things play a role in a wool pad's performance.
Okay. And let's transition to a foam pad now. What are the different types of, are there different thicknesses in the foam pad? Is there different, I know there's different densities of the foam.
Yes.
Is there different, there's different patterns on the foam. Can you just kind of touch on that?
Yeah, obviously you've got a very wide variety of styles. You've got...
and we don't have to worry about hitting every single style, because there is so many.
You've got closed cell structure, they call it the collapsed cell structure from Lake Country. You had the Eurotech ones back in the early 2000s, which I think are way better than what the CCS ones were. I didn't ever like the CCS ones too much. They work okay. But yeah, you've got, you know, cross-grooved ones. You've got all sorts of funny patterns. I always just go straight back to either the flat-faced ones, whether with recessed backing or not. They work fine for me. Waffle ones are good at reducing heat, but you've got to, if you're correcting with them, you've got to push down a little bit, add a bit of pressure so that the whole face of the pad is actually making contact. But yeah, you've got all different, those different styles. You've got CCS, you've got waffle, you've got even the DRC foams, which have no actual foam in the center of the pad, so that you don't get, with the rotary for example, you don't end up with all this abraded paint residue and polish residue in the center, which can cause scarring. So it allows the pad to work better than just a flat face one. I don't have a problem with flat face ones at all, but the DRC ones is a very good design that I have tested in the early days when they came along, and it's a great design. It's a great design. They've worked very, very well. I just would like them to actually produce those pads with more European foam than American foam.
And what is the main purpose for the foam pad, or what is the main use for it?
Well, the main use, for me anyway, the main use is polishing, finishing, jeweling, and then really, really fine work with our non-abrasive products that actually don't contain silicon or you know, oils or anything like that, and actually, you know, our sealants, for example, that have the ability to actually boost the gloss beyond what abrasives can do. So the abrasives, polishes will lay the foundation for the finish, and they give it a great result. And I go from there with that. But foam pads can be used to correct paint. They can be used to polish, finish, jewel, the whole thing.
And does a stiffer pad work better for correcting, and then a softer pad work better for finishing?
Yeah, generally, absolutely, yeah. I have got a couple of quite dense finishing ones, but generally, yes. You start with a thinner or even a thick, very stiff foam pad to correct, and then you go to a couple of 120 pore per inch German foams for finishing the density is so low, it's really, really low density. So that definitely is the general
When or why would you use a foam pad to do correcting versus a wool pad?
Usually if the car's not too bad. If the car's in good condition and it just needs, you know, it's got light swells, moderate scratching, I'll use foam. I never use heavy or extreme cutting foams because I find them to be too stiff, too messy, especially orange. The typical orange foam tends to be, I tend to like to rip apart, very hard to clean. But generally a light cutting pad if the car is in a good condition. I mean, there's no need to use a wool pad on a car that's got light swirl marks and moderate scratches. You just don't need to do that.
So still the wool is going to be the most aggressive approach, the most, does the most correcting, but if the car's not that bad, start with the foam. There's no need to...
And again, you take the least aggressive method.
Yeah, absolutely.
For a one step, I usually use microfiber and go straight to it, and I can get a foam. I can get probably like between a 50 and a 70 pore per inch, maybe even 80 pore per inch. No, not 80, probably 50 to 70 pore per inch foam pad-like finish from microfiber, because I'm not using just one polish. I'm using up to four at once, because for depending on what color the car is, and because we can do that with our technology, we can do that. So sounds crazy, but you know, if I had a purple car here, purple Holden Commodore here last week, yeah. And he wanted a pre-sale, so he basically wanted to, you know, correct the damage that there was, which was probably like a medium to fairly heavy damage. You know, lots of swells, a lot of scratching, so I used microfiber on that, but I wanted to get as much color improvement and clarity I could from that one step that I did with the DA, and so I used four polishes at once. I generally use two or three, occasionally I use one. But yeah, wool is obviously up until 2010 was the most aggressive pad we had. And of course, now I told you about denim and velvet.
Right.
They're there for orange peel reduction. They're there for sanding mark removal if you want to do that. But wool and microfiber can definitely do it too.
Okay. So I guess the step above wool, if you don't want to wet sand a car, is to go to the denim, right?
Yeah, denim and velvet. You know, obviously, if you want to wet, like I said before in the previous episode, if you want to wet sand a car, get it dead flat, you want to have it dead flat, you want to wet sand it or dry, you know, wet and dry sand it. because the denim velvet will never get you that dead flat finish. You can get close to that, but it doesn't do it anywhere near as, it's probably sanding is probably actually faster. Okay. For, if you want to make it dead flat, if you just want to reduce peel, or you know, take out some sanding marks that are from, say, you know, only using 1,000 grit or 1,200 grit sanding paper or discs, yeah, you can, you want to go there. But for general heavy damage, definitely wool pad's a nice thing. And on a DA, it works fine. You might have a very fine amount of marring, but the idea with wool, why a lot of people can't get a great finish, is because of the compound that they use, because it's too, because it gouges the whole time, or their speeds are too high and they don't slow down and refine it, or they don't clean their pad.
Yes.
You know, like I know plenty of body shops, and still to this day in this country, that will do a whole car with a wool pad. They'll might even use compressed air or a screwdriver or whatever all the time on it, on every panel, before they do each panel. And they'll leave it and they'll actually go and do the next car with it, with still with some broken down polish residue in there. And the answer I get usually from them when I ask them about that, why is your wool pad covered in dust and, you know, all that and still dirty? Oh, that'll give it more cut. I'm like, yeah, but you're going to put marks all over the thing. And they just can't grasp it. They just can't grasp that idea of keep your pads clean.
Yeah, that's a... you'll hear or the Michael Stoops interview we did with Jason. He was giving you credit for always talking about, you know, pad cleanliness and how important that is too. So,
it's probably the biggest thing, especially today with these large orbit throw 20mm one like I've got, which is not the Roops, and the Roops ones, which are really good. You know, you've got so much more chance of, you know, build up of abraded paint residue and basically polish that's been used and is worn down and abraded down to very fine. That's just gonna, if you leave that in the pad, that's just gonna cause marring. It's just gonna put marks back in it. The paint that you remove is gonna put marks in it. So you keep that stuff away, you know, wash your pads, like with wool pads, for example, too, is, you know, I often quite hit them with high pressure sometimes, or I'll just wash them really, really, you know, gently with some surfactant and air dry them. I never actually wash them in hot water because the wool pad will shrink, you know. And when I buff with wool, I keep that pad moist, very, very moist, and use a very soft, quite often use a very soft polish to actually work with it, because it keeps the pad moist, allows the pad to do more of the work. Whereas a dry, pasty compound is going to have the compound's actually going to sort of wrap itself around those wool fibers, and it's just going to be dry, it's going to be, you know, it's just not going to be nice. Whenever you're polishing, you always want to have a nice, moist to semi-wet film at all times. You never want to be dry, have a pad that's dry.
Okay. That's when you're really going to start causing some damage.
Hmm.
You know, it's interesting. I'm just sitting back here thinking that there's, through these interviews, and, you know, we're under 50 episodes into the podcast, and, you know, you're our eighth interview. And the theme that is just keeps coming up, and or the themes that keep coming up, is pad cleanliness. Slow the machine down. And make sure you're using the correct product with the correct pad with the correct tool. And for me as a detailer, I'm really struggling because I'm having to kind of relearn sections of my craft that aren't easy for my brain to comprehend, like slowing the machine down. You know, it's in pad cleanliness. It's not easy on my brain.
I can foresee a day, and I don't think it's going to be far away. And this is what I want, hopefully, what the future of the next generation of DA polishing will be, and rotary, will be that with DA, because of the size of the orbit throw that we'll have, if they go any further, is the actual ability to actually correct with a DA at speed 1, speed two on the machine, speed three. I think when it, with the pad technology, if it keeps going, and prior technology that's slowly, very slowly moving forward, it's not going forward as fast as it should. But I think that's what I want. I want to be able to go and say, DA with speed six to correct, or speed five, or even four, that's history. Speed one, two, three, brrr, done. You know, speed, come back to the next step, B, or just B, speed one, speed two. Brrr, just gliding along, you know. Because, I mean, to me, because of the technology, the polishers we have that don't burn paint, you can't burn paint with it really anymore at all. It's impossible. Unless you sit there for, you know, way too long in one spot, and ages and ages and ages, even then it won't do it. It'll just leave a little mark you just polish out. You know, the days of rotary polishing with anything over 1500, and even 1500 most of the time, it's just history. I mean, unless you come along and you work on a Lamborghini Aventador or some of these Ferraris, which, where their paint can be a little bit harder, quite iron, you know. Yeah, you know, there's a time to amp it up a little bit on the rotary, but there's no need to be going 3,000. Now you work a panel on most modern paints these days, and you're polishing a panel with a rotary, and you're moving it too slowly. You know, you actually can start basically bubbling. You start seeing bubbles forming in the paint, and it can delaminate the clear from the color. Hmm. You know, you can twist it. That's what I like to see in the future is, you know, DA for correcting, which I pretty much do most of the time anyway. Rotary is only really good for tree branch scratches.
Right. Really orange deep, gnarly stuff.
And high-end work when you want to sit down and glass the paint out with a rotary at like 400 RPM or 200 or 600 or 900, back to 600 again.
Right.
That's what I like to see.
That's awesome. All right, Matt, we're going to start wrapping up. Is there any last piece of advice you have for someone out there that's, you know, kind of taking all this in and kind of surprised by it? What's some advice you'd give them?
Really research and research and research and look at every manufacturer of pads and backing plates. Take a really good look at them. Spend the time to research it before you buy them. Spend the extra money to buy the good ones with the steel, the metal threads and everything, because, you know, they save you time, they give you better quality, and don't sacrifice a little bit of quality for a little bit of money saved. Because think about we're in this industry, it's all about image and your work. You know, if you want to achieve great finishes, spend the money. It's worth it. I mean, if someone's charging $100 for a backing plate, forget it. Or $75. But if it's, you know, six, like in the UK, if it's £16, £12, £25, whatever it is, I'll spend it because, like I said, I've got some of these backing plates from FlexiPads, and I've had for 3 or 4 years, I've used some of them religiously, really a lot, and they're still like new. Especially the rotary ones. They're still like new, like, because I do quite a bit of rotary still. And then the DA ones, I've hammered a few of them. Like, I've got one that's the low profile one that's for a certain unit. Even though it's actually a very thin, dense plate, it provides very, very good contouring still. And it works very well. And I've done probably 120 cars this year alone with that one plate of a God knows how many hundreds and hundreds of hours, and it still works like new.
Wow.
You know, you're just not having to go and buy more and more and more of them. So research the backing plates. Really have a good look at them. And wool pads. There's wool pads aren't the enemy, the evil thing that people think they are. All the years I've been looking at people polishing cars, they move their arm speeds are too fast. I go half an inch a second to 1.5 inches a second, usually 1 inch, and I never change it. You don't go from doing 1 inch a second from left to right and then zip it back to the other side and go again. Keep it the same. Blow your pad out and go again. And understand that, you know, we've got so many different types of wool, from pile heights to different plies. How well is the twisting done? You know, the Irish, the Turkish, the Australian, the New Zealand wool. The New Zealand wool is the best for polishing. The Australian's probably one of the best for correcting and polishing. The Turkish wool I haven't tried yet. Apparently that's really good. And the Irish is good. So, and spend the money on the good wool pads. You know, and get different types of thicknesses. So if you want to do some sort of, you know, moderate polishing with wool, and keep that wool pad moist. Fiber-based pads or natural microfiber and wool especially need to be kept moist. Mm. And I actually have an additive I use for that if I need to, which goes against convention. It's only a tiny little drop, but it helps a lot to keep that pad moist, because wool pads are hydrophilic, so they absorb moisture. But even though they absorb moisture, they don't transfer it to keep it on the paint surface. So, yeah. And use a nice... Don't use a dry, pasty compound with them. You know, use something that's got a bit of moisture. I mean, for example, you know, something that's a bit more runnier.
If people want to get a hold of you, where can they go?
Basically, I'm on Facebook. I've got the Detailology Auto Refinishing site page on Facebook. You can email me at DreamMC, DREAMMC, at TPG, TravelPeterGrail.com.au. You can call me on Skype. My username is Mr. Polish. And yeah, my phone number, if you want that, if that's all right.
Is
for you guys over in the US or Europe, 61 08 8280 9317. Happy to help anyone out if they need advice for things, you know, where to buy the best gear. You know, ask more about wool pads and different types of pads that are out there. Happy to help out.
And I'll have all that stuff linked up in the show notes if you guys want to head over to autodetailingpodcast.com/MattGibb2. It's autodetailingpodcast.com/2. And I'll have all that information and all the stuff we talked about linked up in the show notes there. Matt, I just want to thank you for joining us again today. And I want to thank all of our listeners for listening. And again, if you want to get a shout out on the top of a future show, just go on over to autodetailingpodcast.com, subscribe in iTunes, and write us a review there. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Matt, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you very much for having me back on again.